If I talk too fast, it's because I just had a cup of coffee. Okay, I was going to bring a picture to show you what these guys look like, but I'm sure you've seen an octopus or pictures of them. They're amazingly ugly. So that's what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to give you a few facts about them, and then I'm going to read a story. The story actually did happen, and it threw some scientists for a loop. Octopuses, you can say octopuses or octopi, live anywhere in the world except for polar regions. Their body, when you see them in pictures, it looks a whole lot bigger than they actually are because I guess the way they take the pictures, they're really close up. But their bodies actually, most of them are only the size of your fist. The biggest ones, the body is the size of a basketball. Their arms, they can range anywhere from one that's about this size to a big Pacific octopus, I believe it's called, that's 31.5 feet across. Really big hug. The suction cups on them. On their arms, they have about 240 per arm. They can go anywhere from the size of, I think it's 2 inches down to the size of a pencil. They feel and taste and smell with those suction cups. That is the primary function of them. They actually can taste a whole lot better than we can. One scientist, I guess he wanted to try it, so he shook hands with an octopus once, and he said it feels like hundreds of tiny hands grabbing your skin. One other thing that fishermen have used octopuses for, there was a sunken ship, and they were wanting to get these clay pots, not clay pots. They're very valuable jugs on the bottom of the ocean, and they couldn't get them, so they tied a string to these octopuses and sent them down, and the octopuses crawled inside, latched onto the jugs, and they pulled them up and rescued and got their clay pots. An octopus has three hearts. Two of them are to pump blood through their gills, or past their gills, and the other one is to pump the blood out to its body. And their blood is blue because they have a copper compound in it instead of iron like we do. An octopus would rather flee than fight. So I don't know if you've heard about the ink. They have a small, it's called a funnel, that they will shoot ink through. If a shark is attacking them, they shoot ink through, make a cloud about the size of them, and then pump water through and get out of there while the shark attacks the ink. They're very good at changing color. Underneath their skin, they have hundreds of little color cells that they can make really big or really small at the drop of a hat. So if something scares them, they will make the right color cells big, and they'll match right in with their surroundings. Their main enemies are eels, sharks, dolphins, and seals. Their main food, crabs, clams, and shrimp. What they like to do is they'll grab, say, a crab, and they have a sharp beak on the top of their mouth. They'll pound in, and they'll inject their saliva into the crab, and it'll turn it in the insides into almost a liquid, and then they'll suck it out. Is an octopus dangerous to humans? Not in the open sea, not very. The small one that I talked about is the one to watch out for. Don't step on it or pick them up, because if you do that, they will bite you and you'll be dead in a very short time. Okay, the story. And I was going to show you this picture now. My name is not Archie, my name's Seth, but this is written from the viewpoint of the octopus. Hello, my name is Archie. I'm an octopus that lives in a huge tank in Miami, Florida. There are many other animals in many other tanks in this room. Every day, many people file through the room and peer through the glass at me. I was sure I had seen it all. You know, the little children knocking on the glass and the parents are staring at you all goggly-eyed? They thought I was some sort of weird creature. But today, something has been going on here that has been very strange. Even though I can hear nothing, I could sense the worry in the two men's eyes as they hurried over to the tank where the lobsters were. They had been doing this for over a week. Each day they would come with a clipboard and count the lobsters and then make some notes on their paper and look more worried than ever as they disappeared. Today, however, One left, and he soon returned with a night watchman. All of us animals watched as those men got into a huge argument. I couldn't quite tell, but it seemed as though the two men were accusing the night watchman of taking lobsters. These humans can be dense sometimes. They assume that invertebrates like us have not developed as far as other animals in the evolutionary process. Because of this, it never occurs to them where the lobsters might be going. After much arm-waving and dark looks, the two men leave. It is now 9 o'clock. The lights have gone off, and the only light comes from a small glow in our tank. And I lost my place in my writing. The night watchman has taken up his post. However, instead of napping in his chair by the door as he usually does, he stands right by the lobster tank. It looks as though he is onto something. I will have to be very careful tonight. Slowly I ease from the rock cave in my tank. My skin matches the rocks that I am lying on. Carefully I extend my arms one after another and grip the side of the tank. The walk up the tank takes time. I reach out for a post that goes up to a catwalk, changing my coloring again to match my surroundings. Quietly I edge along the catwalk until I'm directly over the lobster tank. With a gliding motion that never quite stops, I ease down a second post and into the water. Carefully I look at the watchman. He is skittish tonight. Every small sound makes him flinch, but he is not looking at me. He is watching the lone door into the room. I relax. Just out of my reach is a lovely lobster. Quickly I squirt water from my funnel and drop my arms around my unsuspecting prey. As I prepare to devour the delicious morsel, the lights in the room suddenly snap on and I find myself looking into the surprised face of the night watchman. The next day, these people investigated the lobster tank and here, not the lobster tank, the octopus tank, and here this octopus was going over to the tank. He'd take a lobster back to his tank and he was hiding the shells inside his cave. And it completely threw them for a loop because invertebrates are not supposed to have that type of thinking. And they couldn't figure out why it was that way. Amazing animals. I think God threw that into that sequarium there to wake people up.
Can you think of a bird that drinks worm juice and smells like mushrooms? Well, you've just heard a description of the kiwi. The kiwi that I'm talking about is not the green fruit you put on pizza, but rather this bird has first claim to the name. You don't have to capitalize the K when you spell the word, neither do you have to add the S to make it plural. The closest relative is the giant extinct elephant bird of Madagascar. There are 5 species of this kiwi. They are native to New Zealand. However, most New Zealanders have not seen the bird in the wild. This name is very common. You see it in veterinary medicines, drugs, varnishes, insurances, seeds, kiwi brand bacon, golden kiwi lottery, kiwi boot polish, probably heard that last one, and in cartoons, they represent the New Zealand people. These kiwis can live up to 20 years. Some sites say actually up to 50, but at least 20. They're the size of a chicken and weigh anywhere from 3 to 9 pounds. Their head is very small, but their eyes are very small in proportion to their body. And a lot of their eyes are very weak and even partially blind, although their ears are large and they hear very well. Their bill is 6 inches long, and they have long hairy bristles back at the base that supposedly help with their keen sense of smell. These are the only birds that have their smellers at the end of their bill, 6 inches out there, and they have an excellent sense of smell. With two inch wings, these things are grounded. They have short, stout legs with 3 toes and cat-like claws on each one. They can kick, jump, and tear, so watch out. They walk with a rolling gait, and yet they're fast runners, probably can outrun you. Their feathers are camouflaged, shaggy, coarse, brown, yet hair-like with patterns, and they're sometimes woven into black cloaks. Their skin is tough and leathery, and their bones are not typical bird bones, but they're marrow-filled. Their bones are bathed in 100.4-degree blood temperature, which is actually 2 degrees less than most birds. 19th century Charlie Douglas described their taste as a piece of pork boiled in an old coffin, although he did say their eggs taste like fritters. Their eggs make great fritters. These are nocturnal birds, and they are called soil feeders, with a diet of cicadas, beetle larvae, caterpillars, worms, snail slugs, fly larvae, and you get the rest of the picture. Being their diet is 85% water, they actually drink very little water. But when they do, they look like a chicken, from what I hear. They can actually sniff worms out of the ground up to 1 inch deep. They have been known to marry, bird language, as for up to 20 years, their lifetime. They're monogamous. Although they're not very sticky, they end up spending half their life apart from each other. Unfortunately, it's a feminine-dominated relationship, getting quite volatile at times. They seem to have excellent memories, remembering things up to 5 years. Their mating season is May through March, and oftentimes the male does all the incubating the entire time. They're chalky white, greenish-white eggs. It takes up to 30 days to make an egg. Contrast that to the 1 day for a chicken. And this egg is 5 inches long and up to 1 pound. Which is a quarter of the body weight. Now, if you take that in human proportions, it would be a 25-pound baby. They lay eggs one at a time and can do up to 6 per season. The female, being she's making the egg, has to eat up to 3 times her normal diet to supply the nutrients. But unfortunately, the last couple days she can't eat because the egg is so large it compresses her organs. The chick emerges fully feathered, and it does not eat for the first week. It stays in the nest. The parents do not protect their children, their babies. And as a result, only 5% of them survive up to 6 months. That means 95% die. They live on mountain slopes, pine forests, grasslands, sand dunes, and you get the picture, in New Zealand. They are burrows. They sleep underground when they sleep, and they have anywhere from a single burrow to meters of labyrinths with various entrances. They are very territorial. They live at one spot for their life. Trespassers, if one trespasses into another territory and he hears a call, he'll run back to his territory before he responds because they're smart enough to know what's coming. They have up to from 4 to 100 acres, and unfortunately, the larger the acreage, the more chances of attracting a mate. These are extremely territorial, kind of like Americans. They will often fight to the death. They often engage in calling duels and are known to leave behind a dead bird at the end. These kiwis are endangered. They are coming back, but they were down to 100,000, which down from 12 million is quite a bit. They have been placed on predator-free islands or in kiwi houses as of 1990s, and they're making a comeback, although they're still considered endangered. If you want to see one, there's 13 zoos outside of New Zealand that you might can find one. So that is on my to-do list, to find one of these kiwis to go see him. So let's give God the glory he deserves for creating the amazing kiwi.
Who likes bugs? Not me. Especially not in the house or in my coffee. But God made some really amazing bugs, so I've picked a variety of them to talk about. My sources that I got most of these from are this book by Mike Atnip, and the title is On a Backyard Safari, and the book Censored Science by Bruce Malone. I got one of them from that book. So, first of all, a few spiders and some of their interesting habits. Jumping spiders can do some really amazing jumps. They don't use muscles to jump. They use hydraulics. Instead of blood, they have something called hemolymph, which instead of turning red when it contacts oxygen like our blood does, it turns blue. And this is not in veins in their body, it is throughout their body. And so when they decide they want to jump, whether it's to catch prey or to get away from something, they simply squeeze all that hemolymph back into their back legs, which stiffen and shoot them forward and up. So fast that when Mike Atnip tried to capture it with his camera at 60 films per second, one film the spider is there and the next film he's not. Actually, one of them had a little blur where the spider is disappearing. So they are extremely fast. I thought I would read part of one of the stories he has in here about their experience with the jumping spider they captured. He's lying on the couch and happened to notice his son's escaped pet jumping spider crawling along the ceiling. "Daniel," I hollered, "there's your jumping spider." When Daniel reached up with a jar to capture it, the little spider, right before my eyes, dropped from the ceiling to the floor, spinning a drag line behind it, all in about 1 second. In that time, it had spit out the end of the drag line from its spinnerets, attached it to the ceiling, and dropped 8 feet to the floor, a distance of 200 times its own body length. Jumping spiders usually spin a drag line when jumping, allowing them to simply crawl back up if the jump doesn't end well. This would be the equivalent of a man attaching the end of a rope to an anchor point and dropping 1,200 feet, spinning the rope as he fell, not to mention crawling quickly back up if necessary. So God gave them an amazing feat or ability to be able to escape like that. They can jump 50 times their own body length. Okay. Next one is the fishing spider. God gave them a wetsuit, naturally. They have stiff hairs on their body that trap a layer of air around them so that when they dive, they can breathe, actually, by pumping that air they have trapped around them through their book lungs, which are basically look like a book, and they pump the air through that. When they pop out of the water, they are completely dry. The wolf spider does not build a web. Instead, they wander around looking for something to catch. Unlike other more stationary spiders, this spider mom will take her children with her wherever she goes. When they are eggs, she makes a silk egg sac and attaches it to her spinnerets. When the eggs hatch, they often hitch a ride on her back. Now for some insects. Monarch butterflies return to the same wintering grounds as their forefathers, even though they've never been there. Some commercially bred monarchs have returned to the exact wintering grounds as their forefathers after 9 generations in captivity. Fruit flies, the little almost invisible flies you see buzzing around your fruit, you're not sure where they came from. They can do some amazing aerobatics. They beat their wings 220 times a second and can do 90 degrees in 50 milliseconds. Can turn 90 degrees in 50 milliseconds. House flies have a set of claws that help them walk on the ceiling, but that's not all. They also have a pad of hair called pulvillus, hopefully I said it right, between their claws that works on a molecular level to make them stick to things. So it's like molecular attraction. These hairs are so fine that molecular attraction actually holds them to the ceiling, whatever they're crawling on. Okay, fleas. When fleas are trying to find a host, like a dog or a cat, something to be a parasite on, they can jump 200 times their own body length, and they can jump 600 times an hour for 3 days straight. Amazing exercise. Crickets and grasshoppers sing and hear in interesting ways. Grasshoppers sing, or a fancy word for that is stridulate, by rubbing a set of pegs on their rear legs against their wings, while crickets stridulate by rubbing their wings together. All right, well, I'll finish what I the crickets and grasshoppers here. A grasshopper's ear, or tympanum is what it's called, is on its abdomen, but a cricket has his just below his knees. I find this book interesting. There's some amazing things that God made.
How many of you believe that you could identify an adult dragonfly? Really? Not everyone? There are over 3,000 different species of dragonflies. Comparing that to the amount of different kinds of mammals, it's about half. There are approximately 6,000 different types of mammals. So there's actually almost half as many types of dragonflies. Does anyone know where dragonflies lay their eggs? In the water? Close. Some of them do. The vast majority actually lay their eggs inside the skin of a plant. And they can lay, it's usually a water plant, and it's usually below the surface of the water, and they can lay up to 1,500 eggs at a time. Now, dragonflies go through what is called incomplete metamorphosis, which means that they do not have a pupal stage. They only have the egg stage, the nymph stage, and then the adult stage. Dragonfly nymphs spend their entire life underwater. In fact, they can live there for up to 6 years. While they are underwater, they eat anything from other insect larvae to tadpoles and even fish. And they molt up to 17 different times. Now, if you would happen to be a mosquito, a fruit fly, or an average flying bug, aside from a dragonfly, and you would happen to see a dragonfly in the general area, you would have reason to be extremely cautious. Dragonfly's kill rate is 95%. Almost the most efficient of any of God's hunting creatures. Dragonfly's ability to fly is absolutely amazing. Does anyone know which direction dragonflies fly? Backwards? Yes, they go backwards. Any others? Any direction. A dragonfly from a hover, and by the way, they can hover for 6 minutes at a time, can take off in any direction. They can fly as far as 11,000 miles. The globe skimmer has the world's longest insect migration. They travel completely across the Indian Ocean following their prey. Dragonflies can fly at around anywhere from 20 to 30 miles per hour, approximately 100 times their body length per second. Now, you translate that into a person, if I calculated correctly, that would be the same as a 6-foot-tall man running 400 miles per hour. Okay? So, 30 miles an hour for a dragonfly doesn't sound that fast until you translate that into, size, so on. And they can do that without hitting other bugs in the process. How can that happen? Well, insect eyes, we know they are compound eyes, and they have many, many different facets. Dragonflies have by far the best eyes. In fact, their entire head is almost made up completely of eyes. They have nearly 360-degree vision through anywhere from 20,000 to 30,000 facets. Not only can they see in all directions through many different facets, have you ever noticed that dragonflies are very colorful creatures? The reason for that is that dragonflies do not see in only three colors like we do. The electromagnetic spectrum, if some of you understand that, it has many, many different
frequencies of light. Dragonflies see anywhere from 11 to 30 colors. So there's a reason God made them colorful. How do they keep all those eyes clean? Dragonflies, God gave some of them a special airbrush attached to their front legs that work just like windshield wipers. If God made these animals able to kill so efficiently, do they have any predators? Absolutely. I didn't mention that when a dragonfly is molting, that last time when they go from the nymph to the adult stage, that can take up to an entire day, in which that dragonfly nymph, they actually crawl out of the water and molt. Some of them can do it in less than an hour, turn into an adult dragonfly that can go forth and kill. Others spend most of the day there. Many birds, frogs, and even other insects, such as spiders, feed on them during this period of time. One of the most interesting things about dragonflies, have you ever watched them skim across the top of the water? Do you think they're feeding when they do that? That's what I always thought. Actually, they're not. Dragonflies, just like reptiles, are cold-blooded creatures. They cannot regulate their body temperature. So when they want to warm up in the morning, they bask in the sunlight. And when they get too hot, they skim the water. And if you watch, they'll hit it almost consistently three times at a time to cool themselves down.
Okay, I'm going to talk about the amazing another bird. See if you can guess it as I give you a few more details. One thing that's very fascinating about this bird, or amazing about all birds, is the vast variety within birds. We have anything from ostriches down to birds that are only this big that come to your feeder. This bird is very quick. It weighs less than a nickel. It has legs but doesn't use them to walk or hop. Any guesses yet? Hummingbird, you got it. Okay, the hummingbird is actually the smallest bird. There are 359 species of hummingbirds. I was surprised to find that out, but it makes more sense when you realize that only 17 of those species are present in the United States. The rest of them are down in Central and South America. Hummingbirds can thrive up to 17,000 feet of elevation. The average weighs less than a nickel. Most of them are about 3 to 5 inches long, which includes their long bill. Most hummingbirds are very brilliantly colored. Some can actually change their colors depending on how bright it is outside. The smallest hummingbird belongs to a species called the bee hummingbird because it resembles a bee. This one weighs only 2 grams, about 4 regular paper clips. If you had a first-class stamp, a regular stamp, you could mail 14 of these hummingbirds by weight. And it is a little over 2 inches, including the bill. The largest hummingbird belongs to a species called giant hummingbird. I thought they could maybe get more original than that for a name, but after 359 species, you're stuck with giant hummingbird. Its wingspan is approximately 8 inches. But it still only weighs about 1 ounce. Being such a small creature, a hummingbird has a unique problem in a rainstorm. A raindrop can weigh up to 38% of a hummingbird's weight. Imagine a 70-pound object colliding with you. So a hummingbird has a unique method of dealing with this. It can shake similar to a dog to shed water when it's flying. And its only transportation is flying. The legs are only used to scoot sideways or to perch. They are very acrobatic. They can fly in any direction. They can hover. They can take off from a complete standstill. The wings beat up to 80 times per second, giving it that humming sound. They can reach speeds of 34 miles per hour in straight line flight and up to 49 miles per hour in a dive. Hummingbirds are really intriguing to flight experts because of how quick they are and they've been studied with great detail in wind tunnels. A wind tunnel is basically a controlled windy atmosphere. If you've read about the Wright brothers, they used wind tunnels to test various wing shapes. And so they build a box, put a fan at the end, and if you have a glass wind tunnel, you can observe what a hummingbird does as they change their conditions with their fan. And it's been found that a hummingbird can actually produce lift on an upstroke of its wing. Most birds only can do that on a downstroke. As you might have guessed by now, a hummingbird has a really strong metabolism. In fact, the only higher metabolism is found in insects. Its heart can beat 1,200 beats per minute, and it can breathe 250 times per minute. A hummingbird consumes a lot of sugar and very fast. This is supposed to be a 6-minute talk, and if I would be a hummingbird, by the end of 6 minutes, I would have drank 6 cans of soda to show you how much, how fast a hummingbird consumes sugar. My brother thought I could actually drink 6 cans. I decided not to try. I might hover. That is how much sugar a hummingbird would consume proportionately. Most hummingbirds eat spiders, fruit flies, mosquitoes, and lots of flower nectar, especially high mountain coffee flowers. Normal body temperature is 105 degrees. Hummingbird can enter into a condition called torpor. And this was a new word for me. I read the description and it sounded a lot like hibernation. Main difference, though, is that hibernation is more of a scheduled event, maybe on the calendar page of a bear or a raccoon. They do this every fall and it lasts a long time. Torpor is actually a lot briefer of an interval, and they do it mainly when the conditions demand it. So if a hummingbird is out scavenging for food and it's not going so great, maybe it's a really hot afternoon, it'll just find a branch and slow down the metabolism. It actually looks like it's sleeping, but it might only last a few hours. This is what hummingbirds do at night or when food is scarce. The lifespan of a hummingbird is approximately 3 to 5 years. They hatch from eggs the size of a jelly bean. A hummingbird will build its nest out of a spider web. And the reason for that is they can make a very small nest to start out with. But as the baby hummingbirds grow, it'll stretch the nest. Incubation ranges from 14 to 23 days. Most hummingbirds migrate to find food sources, although in some areas it might not be necessary, and they can be a resident hummingbird. This is the case with the Anna's hummingbird, which can live year-round in Florida. The hummingbird does the longest migrations per body length ratio of any other bird. The rufous hummingbird, for instance, spends summers in Alaska and winters in Mexico, a 3,900-mile flight.